Blog Talk Radio.
Here comes the speed. Here comes the rumble. Here comes the crowd. Here comes the Auto Club 400 weekend, March 18th to 20th. Three full days of intense NASCAR action.
Three-car breakaway up at the front.
Plus live music, extreme stunt shows, and more. Here comes the room. For tickets and more information, visit AutoClubSpeedway.com or call 800-944-RACE.
Hi, I'm Cameron Haley, driver number 13, Matei Tundra for Thor Sport Racing in the Camping World Truck Series. You're listening to the Pit Stop Radio with Tim Despain.
Live from Talladega, you're in the Pit Stop with Tim Despain and Stephen Wilson on the Speedway Digest Radio Network, Blog Talk Radio, Stitcher Radio, and your Apple Podcast.
Let's get ready to rumble!
Good evening from Talladega, Alabama. I'm Tim Despain alongside my good friend and CEO of SpeedwayDigest.com, Mr. Stephen Wilson. Stephen, how are you doing tonight, sir?
I'm doing pretty good. It's gotten a little bit warmer up this way. I'm only trying to get out of this cold weather.
Oh, yeah, me and you both. So I know you're a little bit further north up there, closer to Richmond. But, yeah, Stephen, without further ado, let's go ahead and bring Reverend Joe in. Let's get everything started. You know, he's been out in Vegas this weekend. We'll see what all he has. So let's bring Reverend Joe, Pit Stop, in his train, and Stephen Wilson.
Let's get ready to rumble!
Reverend Joe, how you doing tonight, bud? I know you and Miss Betty had a blast on the 31st Speedway.
We've been busy as heck and trying to relax the last couple of days, but we're doing good. And the weather here in Vegas is really warm. We'll be heading to Phoenix tomorrow, where it's supposed to be even warmer. So it's been good.
That's good. That's good, Reverend. And thank you again for taking time out to call, you know, back into the show and everything. Let's go ahead and get the invitation going. And me and Reverend, we'll talk about the weekend in Las Vegas, bud.
All righty. Lord, we come before you. We thank you for a safe weekend. We thank you for all you do. Pray for those who have lost loved ones in the last week. We pray for all of those who are suffering. And we also pray for all of our soldiers all over the world and all over the United States that every day risk their lives, our police officers, firemen, and our military, to keep us safe and alive and protected. We ask your protection upon all the racers over the next week and all of us. Be with us. We thank you in Jesus' name. Amen.
Amen, Reverend Jeff. Reverend Joe, as always, great invitation again. And before we get started, Reverend, before we get going into everything, all the weekend's actions out there at Vegas. I think Stephen Wilson might have some breaking news out of Furniture Row Racing. So let's let Stephen, didn't Furniture Row Racing make an announcement this morning? Stephen, can you hear me, son? Reverend Joe, can you hear me?
Yeah, I can hear you.
Okay, Stephen must be having a little bit of difficulty. There was breaking news come out of Furniture Row Racing this morning. They withdraw their appeal penalty of NASCAR. Todd Bear will call the race from the pit box in Phoenix. Joe Garone, president of Furniture Row Racing, has informed NASCAR it has withdrawn the penalty for a pre-race infraction at Atlanta Motor Speedway. Garone, who met with NASCAR officials, said he was satisfied with the clarification of the penalty and was appreciative of the sanctioning body's cooperation on this matter. Furniture Row Racing crew chief Cole Pyne will serve his one race suspension at this weekend's NASCAR Sprint Cup Series race in Phoenix. Selling for Pyne on race day in Phoenix will be former Furniture Row Racing crew chief Todd Barry, who is now the director of fabrication at Joe Gibbs Racing. Barrier will call the race strategy on top of the pit box for Martin Truex Jr.'s number 78 Bass Pro Shops Tracker Boats Toyota. Quote, being able to secure the services of Todd for Phoenix was an incredible gesture by Joe Gibbs Racing, said Garone. We are very proud to have a technical alliance with Joe Gibbs Racing and are deeply grateful for its quick response to offer assistance. I also want to thank Todd. He has plenty on his plate, and to go the extra mile to help us out is appreciated by everyone at Furniture Row Racing. Barrier and Pyne have had a long-standing relationship as co-workers. Barrier was the crew chief at Furniture Row Racing from July 2012 through the 2014 season, while Pyne served as the team's lead race engineer during the same period. Barrier and Pyne also worked together at Richard Childress Racing and JTG Doherty Racing. Quote, I don't see this being any more than a seamless transition of Todd taking over the crew chief role for one race, said Garone. Todd knows our system very well. He has worked with Martin, Cole, the majority of our crew, and Toyota. Just to get that out there, Reverend Joe, I didn't know if you had heard that while you were on the West Coast.
Yes, I heard about that, and I think they made a smart move because it wasn't a terrible infraction, but it was something that happened. And, you know, the whole thing is, I believe firmly that you need to pick your fights. And that was one that, number one, they probably weren't going to win. And number two, why argue over that? I mean, it was an obvious thing that happened. Whether it happened on purpose or not, it happened. So, you know, they paid the penalty. They're paying the penalty of the crew chief for a week, and they also paid the penalty of having to start the back of that race that week. So, you know, I think it was the smartest thing for them to do.
I definitely agree, Reverend. And I heard someone quote, I'm not going to call their names, it was either Alex Lipscomb, CSX, NASCAR, or something, and somebody made the statement, and this is a very good statement. Somebody made the statement, if a crew chief is not trying to push the envelope, he's not doing his job, Reverend Joe.
Well, that's a fact, and that's what racing has always been. I've been involved with racing for 50 years, and we're always pushing the rule book. We're always shoving it to find out how far we can go, how much we can push it, and where the limit is. And that particular infraction was pretty obvious. There was no doubt about it. The question is whether that piece of metal was left there on purpose to hold the flap up or not. And I don't think they're exactly admitting guilt in doing so, but, you know, the whole thing is the ball field belongs to NASCAR, and you got to play by their rules. And when you get caught pushing that envelope, you got to take it like a man and move on. Now everybody knows what you can't do.
Amen, Reverend Joe. And let me go ahead and get my part out of the way. I'm going to cover the NASCAR Xfinity Series. whereas race number three, the 20th annual Boyd Gaming 300 at Las Vegas Motor Speedway this past weekend. Kyle Busch was your winner. Daniel Suarez finished in second. Eric Jones finished third. Chase Elliott fourth. Austin Dillon fifth. Brandon Jones sixth. Ty Dillon seventh. Elliott Sadler eighth. Ninth was Justin Allgaier. And round after the top 10 was Brendan Gaughan. And, Reverend, let's see what Kyle Busch and Chris Dale had to say in the media center at Las Vegas Motor Speedway.
We're going to hear from our winning team right now of today's 20th annual Boyd Gaming 300 NASCAR Xfinity Series race here at Las Vegas Motor Speedway. And race winner is Kyle Busch. He drives the number 18 NOS Energy Drink Toyota for Joe Gibbs Racing. He's joined by crew chief Chris Gale. 78 wins now in the NASCAR Xfinity Series for Kyle Busch. His first win in the series at Las Vegas Motor Speedway. And Kyle, talk about the significance of that. I know you're a driver that likes to accomplish things, and this had to be one that you really were glad to accomplish here today.
Yeah, certainly was really cool to have the opportunity to win here. I've had many of opportunities in the past and have come up short or just haven't quite had the day that we needed to have in order to get it done. But, today, this weekend, Chris Gale and everyone at Joe Gibbs Racing, they've been building some really good stuff. And JGR engines are fast as well, too. So the NOS Energy Drink Camry was really good. And I just can't say enough about them. And the work that goes into everything makes my job look easy. But, today was pretty special just to be able to finally get a win here in the hometown and check that one off the list. So really excited about that and being able to accomplish that. And now looking forward to, I guess, the one last one that's on the list to get is Watkins Glen. But before that, we've got many more. So next week's another one that we want to go out there and try to score a victory.
And Chris, just talk about the dominance of this race car here today, the 18 car, a pole sitter. Led all but one lap, and,
Yeah, how do we miss that one lap? Just through the first pit sequence?
Yeah, I'd have to go back and review that. But just talk about the
you got it?
Talk about the dominance of this race car and really, how this race team since the start of the season, last couple of weeks, really been strong.
Yeah, it has been strong to start this year. I think you saw this coming towards the end of last year if you just looked at JGR as a whole and how we started running on the Xfinity side. It's a big tribute to all the guys at the shop and kind of all the work that was started last year and it's kind of come over into this year, and then we've just been able to start maybe a touch better than maybe where we left off last year. And it's just everybody likes to look at things and go, man, the JGR cars are 1-2-3 qualifying 2 weeks in a row, they're running up front. It's a lot of work by a lot of guys to make that happen. It's not like one thing that just does it. It's work over the off season, work towards last year, and then it just kind of all comes together.
Absolutely. And a 1-2-3 finish today for Joe Gibbs Racing at Toyota. Congratulations. We'll take questions now for Kyle or Chris. Start right here with my good friend Holly Kane.
Holly Kane, NASCAR.com. Kyle, I remember asking you this a couple of years ago. Did you feel any more love winning and racing in front of your hometown crowd? And you laughed at me when I asked. But did it feel at all special today? And has it been any different coming back as the champion this year, too?
Certainly there's been a lot more followings, I guess, through the garage area, things like that, people that want a piece of you, your autograph, a picture, whatever it may be. And, I think that has something to do with the championship. I think this week, has something to do with just that there's a lot of people here, a lot of people through the Neon Garage. Really, really unique opportunity for a lot of fans to get up close and personal, not only with the drivers or the crews, but, of course, the cars as well, too. So, it's always fun to go every week and see how intros is going to go. And, this week, typically, it's not much different than others, actually. I've always said it, and I'll say it again. It seems like there's too many out-of-towners that come in here, but I'm sure I didn't make very many friends while I was here winning too much either in the bullring days. So, there may be some naysayers from those days as well.
Other questions? Right here, Tom has one. Go ahead.
Tom Zaleski, Ion County Today. Chris, when the red flag came was lifted and we started back up again, how much was fuel a concern? How much were you in fuel-saving mode at that point?
Oh, it was a concern before the red flag. We obviously were close. We didn't know how close until we pitted under the green flag stop, and then you kind of get a read on your mileage, and you kind of have an idea of how far you can go the next time. So we knew we would be close based on that mileage. We were hoping that the red flag wouldn't come out and that we were going to get a few more yellow flag laps, and then that would have helped ensure that we could have made it to the end. So we knew it was an issue. But at that point, priority is keeping the lead. You don't know if another caution is going to fall, whatever. So, you know, if pit road hadn't opened and I didn't know that the majority were going to come back down and splash for fuel, we would have been in a situation where we'd had to stay out front and then just try to save towards the end. However, you know, everybody scans everyone else, so you kind of know other people are coming, and there was only 11 on the lead lap at that time, so we had a good feel that at least five of the guys on the lead lap were coming to top off with fuel, so there's no reason not for us to do the same thing. And then once we did that, we knew we were okay on fuel there the rest of the way.
Okay, and Reverend Joe, that was Christy on Kyle Busch and Media Center after winning the bowl game in 300 at Las Vegas, and I forgot to read off the top 10 in points after the bowl game in 300 there. Daniel Soares is leading Elliott Sadler by 3 points. Ty Dillon, third. Brandon Jones, fourth. Tim Algar, fifth. Brendan Gaughan, sixth. Eric Jones, seventh. Ryan Reed, eighth. Ryan Sieg, ninth. And Jill Burton, tenth. And I think we've got Stephen Wilson back on. Let's bring Stephen back in here. I think he's back. Stephen, is that you, bud?
Yeah, can you guys hear me a little bit better this time?
Yes, sir, I can. And, Stephen, since you were breaking up, I'm going to go ahead. Reverend Joe was at Las Vegas Motor Speedway this weekend. Reverend, you want to talk a little bit about the Xfinity Series, Kyle Busch's second win in a row?
Hey, they did a fantastic job. The whole Gibbs team did. Actually, everybody did a good job. It was a great race all the way around. It was close, even though, you know, when you look at the finish, it looks like it was a runaway, but it really wasn't. The guys that were digging all day long in all positions throughout the field. And I've always been a little partial to Kyle Busch. I've known the Gibbs operations for years. And I myself, since the 60s, have raced a car with the number 18 on it. So I kind of get a little prejudiced that way. Got to watch myself a little on that. But it was a very good race. Hate to see a red flag, especially when cars are crashing all over the place and, you know, guys are spending money they don't necessarily have, and also the fear of injury and such. And people have to realize that even with the great safety in these cars and even with the great safer barriers and all the rest of it, we're still talking a dangerous sport, and that's what it is. And it was good to see everyone, you know, get out of there without injuries. And everyone have a great day. The fans loved the race. The weather was good, different from Sunday for sure. And I thought it was a great race.
Go ahead, Steve. You got the floor, bro.
Yeah, it was. Kyle Busch, this was one of the tracks that he had not won at in the Xfinity Series, especially at his home track out there. He had won previously in the Sprint Cup Series out there in 2009. He won from the pole, and obviously in dominating fashion, leading 199 to 200 laps out there was obviously just a day that he wanted to have, especially in the hometown crowd and just a track that he had not won out in the Xfinity Series, to continue notching off those wins in that series. And one other stat that came out of the weekend, Kyle Busch has led over 16,000 laps in the NASCAR Xfinity Series, which also is a record in that series. So not only does he have the record number of wins, he also has the record number of lead laps in that series.
That's a great stat, Stephen. There's something funny about racers in that when you win at one particular track or win well in a particular series, it tends to, in your brain, get easier. It isn't easier, but you've got a little better attitude about it. You go there expecting to win rather than expecting to do your best, hoping to win. And I think it shows in Kyle, and I think the last couple of years, his maturity has come so far. And I think a lot of the credit of that goes to Samantha. So he's grown up, and he's a heck of a guy. He always was a great driver, don't you think?
Yeah, I don't think when you talk about Kyle Busch, you really do have to talk about somebody that, when they do get in a race car or any type of vehicle whatsoever, whether it be the trucks, Xfinity Series, Sprint Cup Series, whatever it may be, you always have to look for him as being a driver that is always there. You know, he gives it his all. He gives it 110% no matter what he does. And some of those are, you know, checkers or records kinds of days for him where he puts his all into either winning the race or going on the back of a record. And, you know, we've seen that out of him. But, you know, his maturity level over the years has obviously helped him in that quest of winning as many races as he has on the national level, leading as many laps as he has, breaking records in the Xfinity Series, which, you know, he has broken Mark Martin's record for the number of wins. Obviously, the number of laps now led this past weekend. He did break that record in the Xfinity Series. And, you know, he's you know, now a Sprint Cup champion. So, you know, he's over the years obviously has transformed himself into a driver that obviously is, you know, at the pinnacle of his career and has many more years to come down the line for him.
Yeah, the fact of the matter is, if Kyle Busch is in the race, he's in the race. Regardless of where he's running or whatever he's having problem with or whatever, he's still in it and fighting all he can to get all he can. He never gives up, which is a great thing to have in a race car driver. I mean, there's days when things can just make you feel like, God, why am I bothering? But Kyle just keeps on going no matter what, and that's a great quality. And as you said, he's not only matured, but he does have a lot more years in him. And he's at the peak of his career, and I don't doubt that he'll peak even higher.
Yes. Absolutely, and you know, as we look towards the new generation of drivers, you know, obviously we don't know when Jimmy Johnson will ultimately retire, being in his 40s the way he is. You know, we do have to look towards that next generation of who's going to step into those shoes of being that next generation of driver, and you know, Kyle Busch has to be one of those names that is going to be there to take over those shoes within the next few years. And then it's not that he isn't already there yet, but Jimmy Johnson obviously is still out there. He's still winning, and he's still a current generational driver that is, you know, racking up wins. He's already surpassed Dale Earnhardt Sr. with his win at, well, he's matched Dale Earnhardt Sr. at this current moment with his win at Atlanta. And I'm sure he's got more wins coming towards him in the next few years or in this year and this season coming up. He's got a lot of tracks that are, you know, within his ballpark that he's going to be able to win at. Martinsville coming up here in a couple of weeks, probably somewhere we got to look forward to in Mad Texas and a couple other racetracks. But, you know, as these drivers start to, you know, think about retirement, you know, the next generation of driver does have to step in, and obviously between him and Brad Keselowski and some other drivers out there, you know, you have to start looking at them on what they've done in their career and, you know, who's going to step into their shoes, and obviously those names are going to start coming out, and Kyle Busch definitely has to be start talking about already.
This is true, and then there's a generation coming up behind him that's got some drivers that are equally as, you know, have the equal potential. And one thing I believe is that I think Kyle Busch in his maturity has also become a really good coach for these other drivers. And, you know, you look at Eric Jones, who I think at his age is showing the same kind of talent that Kyle Busch did. I think he learned from either watching Kyle Busch or for maybe talking to Kyle Busch. He hasn't gotten so rowdy, I guess is the best word for it. And when he has a tough day, he still talks kindly. He doesn't get all wound up. He's got that cool head that it took Kyle a few years that I think Kyle would have had a couple of more championships and many more wins in either series if he hadn't been so darn rowdy in the very beginning. Though, that's what makes him exciting. And if everybody wants to boo him every time he's announced, my feeling has always been, as long as they're responding to you, you're doing something right.
Exactly, Reverend Joe. Exactly. And you brought up a good question. I think both of y'all brought up. Stephen or Reverend, have y'all heard? I'll go with Stephen. You know, saying Premier Motorsports sent out a press release earlier a few days ago. Thad Moffitt. You know, you're talking about youngins coming up. There's another youngin that stepped into a car Sunday. Stephen, have you heard how he finished?
No, I had not kept up on, you know, what he had done.
I hadn't either. have you heard, Reverend, have you heard anything about Thad Moffitt, how he finished Sunday?
I think it was chair race. Yeah, I'm not sure, but there's another guy who's coming up. But this Holt Racing at the upper levels of NASCAR takes an awful lot of work, and then it takes getting noticed, because there's millions of men and women all over this country that have the potential to be fantastic racers, but it's just a matter of happen to be in the right place at the right time. Also, these days, not doing anything stupid that will get you in trouble, so that people notice, he's too much of a troublemaker, heck of a driver, but he gets too hot-headed. We don't need that, you know? So it's a tricky game, but there's a lot of great drivers out there. Moffitt's one of them. Boy, there's dozens of them all over the country. Todd Gilliland comes to mind. It's a shame David doesn't have a ride this year, but Todd is coming on strong, and, you know, his dad was a great racer always, so he learned from the best, and he's put his own to it, and is doing very well.
Yeah, and just to throw some other names out there, you got Jesse Little coming up. Who else?
Yeah.
You got, Jill Burton run in the Sprint Cup Series last night for Ron Devine and BK Racing, and you got them. You got Ryan Reed, which let everybody know we're going to have Ryan Reed next Tuesday night at 8 o'clock Eastern time. He's going to come on the 16 Lily Diabetes card in NASCAR Xfinity Series. He's going to come on right after Dave Allen, president of Auto Club Speedway. I mean, there's so many names that you could throw in there. But, Reverend Joe, let's let Stephen go ahead and cover the Sprint Cup Series out there, Las Vegas Motor Speedway, race number 3, the Cobalt 400, and then we'll get your thoughts on that. And I got a media center interview also with Keselowski and Paul Wolf.
All right.
Yeah, race number 3 out there at Las Vegas Motor Speedway, the Cobalt 400. Brad, as you just said, Brad Keselowski, your eventual winner out there. I mean, he poured it on to Jimmy Johnson there in the late goings. Jimmy Johnson had a fair bit of lead out there trying to stretch a last-minute fuel run and tire run out there. Was able to jump out there to a pretty fairly decent lead out there, but Brad Keselowski in the very late goings was able to run him down, pass him out there. To win the 19th annual Cobalt 400. This is his 18th victory in 236 NASCAR Sprint Cup Series of races, and his first victory and second top 10 finish in 2016. This is also his second victory and fourth top 10 at Las Vegas Motor Speedway. Joey Logano finished second for Penske Racing out there. Jimmy Johnson will go on to finish third, and Ryan Blaney was your highest finishing rookie of the day. Kyle Busch finished. Kyle Busch out there leading the points by 6 over Jimmy Johnson. You know, going back to Ryan Blaney here for a second. Ryan Blaney, ever since Daytona, has been in the Wood Burbage Racing. They've been steadily making gains out there, especially for him. Ran very, very well at Atlanta last week. Obviously, getting their top 10 out there this week with Ryan Blaney. Unfortunately for Chase Elliott this week, the other rookie that's running for the contender rookie of the year title this year, didn't have such good luck. Got in a little earlier accident, put him out of the race early on. But, got to give the Wood Brothers returning to full-time status in 2016. And Ryan Blaney just really making gains every single week out there and returning to a top 10 finish this week at Las Vegas.
And let's see what Fred Keselowski and Paul Wolf had to say in the media center. at Las Vegas Motor Speedway after winning the Cobalt 400.
Okay, we're going to hear now from some of the folks from the winning team. And that's the crew chief, Paul Wolf, and vice chairman of Team Penske, Walt Zarnicki. Congratulations to you both. Big win today all the way around for Team Penske, finishing 1-2, and then the 21 having a great run for Wood Brothers. I'm going to ask you first, Paul, and Walt and I were talking about it briefly. Last week, probably didn't get out of the box like you wanted to at Atlanta, but certainly you turned things around here today at Las Vegas. Talk about how that happened.
Yeah, absolutely. I think, you know, heading into Atlanta last week, there was high hopes as we were very strong with this package, the low downforce package in 2015, the couple opportunities we had to run it. So when we unloaded at Atlanta and didn't have, you know, quite the speed we were hoping for, that was a little frustrating. We worked hard, didn't qualify where we needed to be, got our cars better for the race, but still not where they needed to be contend for wins. So from there, I think there was a few late nights back at Team Penske where, you know, guys worked really hard. We felt like we needed more potential out of our cars, and we worked very hard on our, some aero pieces and, you know, some different things. And felt like when we unloaded here at Vegas this week, we kind of showed that that all that hard work paid off in qualifying and having both cars up front. And as we translated into the race today, we showed the strength and race trims. So, really, all I can say is hats off for all the hard work back at the shop. The result, there was a lot put in, and you know, this West Coast swing was very hard on the teams early in the season. But we were able to bring better race cars to the racetrack, and we got the results because of it.
Congratulations, and Walt, certainly a big day for Team Penske. We got that chase berth locked up now for the two car and the 22, certainly with a great run, and as we talked about the 21, certainly from the Wood Brothers. But just talk about how, what this means to, for the organization this early in the season.
Well, thank you, Kerry. A little reprise on what Paul said. I think this really took a little bit of the sting out of what happened at Atlanta. We thought we had two pretty good cars at Atlanta, didn't perform, ended up with a decent finish. But as Paul said, we had a team debrief meeting, I guess it was on Tuesday, that went for about an hour and a half, that was thorough and candid. And so Paul and Todd Gordon were pretty confident they were going to come to Las Vegas with two good cars. Specifically, both cars, I think, showed great long-run speed. And I think it demonstrated that, you know, the way we finished. Certainly you hope, from my perspective, to have a 1-2 finish anytime. I wasn't quite expecting it because the level of competition out here, frankly, was pretty stout. And you know, the typical suspects, the 48, the, you know, the 4, the 18, you know, the 41 for sure, and then they all got caught up in that wreck. So this wasn't a laydown kind of a win. So to answer your specific question, Kerry, this is huge for the team. Being in the chase right now for Brad takes a lot of that pressure off, as we know, and it really allows Joey then to really focus on getting that win. I think that even from a point standpoint, he's still in good shape, but we want to get those wins. So we know that we're capable. We know that Team Penske is capable of running with anybody right now and being competitive.
Absolutely, absolutely, especially after today. We'll go to the press box right now. We'll start. Excuse me, I believe Reed Spencer has a question. Go ahead.
Yes, Reed Spencer with NASCAR Wire Service. I've got a question for Paul. When you guys came in and opted to sacrifice track position for four tires on lap 199, were you already thinking ahead to the point that you might do the stay out on the next caution?
Yeah, I mean, obviously, once you lose your track position, you know, I think the two-tire strategy works well if you can get the clean air, you know, and get out in the lead. And obviously, the 48 was able to do that early in the race when he did that. But, you know, the way I look at it is if you're going to do two tires, you got to get that clean air. Otherwise, we'll take four all day long. And it gives you opportunities at the end to do some different strategies to get that track position back. And obviously, you know, we knew when the caution fell there, we were still short on fuel, but at that point it was worth the risk to take the gamble and hope for the cautions, and obviously we got those, and we're able to get to victory lane.
And Reverend Joe, being out there, I know, you and Miss Betty, y'all got to see everything that was going on, but my big question, Steve and I, we were texting back and forth during the race there. The wind, they forecast it to be really, and the wind was really, really big. Could you tell that it made the cars move around any, Reverend Joe, whenever they come off a corner with a tailwind or headwind or whatever, a crosswind?
The wind was outrageous. Before the race started, the tops off of many of the pit boxes, those fancy pit boxes they build these days, have a cover on top. We had most of them have to take down their covers after several of them blew off. We were standing, Betty and I were out on pit road, and we're standing next to a fireman who almost got hit by the roof off of one of the boxes as it came apart. And I'm talking about steel braces or aluminum braces of pretty good size. It was a bit scary. The thing as far as downforce and such was, in talking to some of the drivers and especially talking to the crew members, the biggest thing with downforce, as most well know, is you go down like the front stretch at Vegas. You're flying off into turn one. You've got this wind hitting you in the nose. It's driving your car down into the ground, which is great, but one of the things that kept happening was the wind would be hitting you like crazy, and then all of a sudden just stop for maybe 10 or 15 seconds, and the same thing going down the backstretch. And you never knew when it was going to stop, increase, decrease, or what it was going to do. So a lot of the guys were talking about having to tiptoe a little bit until they, because of the fact that it was so inconsistent. Garbage was blowing everywhere, and it wasn't that anybody was throwing it. It was just unbelievable wind that didn't let up hardly at all. It just was, as the day went on, Betty and I were up in the media center, and then we were out on pit road. And by the last stretch, we were going to stay out on pit road for the last 20 laps or so, and the wind got so cold, we ended up going inside, watching it on the screen, because it was just a chilling cold. So I know it was moving the cars around. You could tell the guys in the pit boxes, in each pit stall, being very careful with everything they moved to make sure nothing took off on them, because it was really blowing through their heart.
I bet it was, Reverend. And I don't know if I've mentioned it before, but back in 2009, I was very fortunate enough to make my first trip to Las Vegas Motor Speedway. And a lot of people don't know, sort of tell them, Reverend, it's north of town right there, right off of I-15. And it's so wide open. It's right there at Nellis Air Force Base. It's so wide open when the wind comes through there. It's not like being dirt road country boy down here in Talladega, Alabama, and having a hill or something to block it. Whenever it comes through, there's nothing to stop it, is it, Reverend?
No, not only is there nothing to stop it, the mountains that are way off in the back kind of hold it into that part of the valley, even though they're a good distance away. But you're wide open completely, and one of the reasons it's wide open is because of Nellis Air Force Base. They've got the clearance, and they own most of the land out there. So one of the things you got to say about Vegas, though, is all day long, every day you're there, you get one of the greatest air shows in the world going on across the street, flying right on by you. But it is so wide open when we talk. Well, I was standing on pit road on the outside of the cars next to the grass before the race started, and the wind was blowing across the grass with such force, actually stripping the dust and dirt out from under the grass. You could just see these waves of dust going right across the grass. People were stopping and taking pictures of it. It was so strange looking.
That is unreal, Reverend. And Reverend, I'm going to hand you over to Stephen. I need to take a little quick pit stop, and I'll be right back. But just to let y'all know, we've got Todd. We've got Todd Beasley waiting, and we've got Rowdy waiting. And Reverend, you stay on as long as you want. When you get ready to go, just let us know. I'm gonna hand you over to Stephen. I'll be right back, Stephen.
You know, you were talking about a little bit of the weather out there. I think they had a little bit of everything out there between the rain, the sandstorm out there, anything that could be thrown at them. You know, one of the things that NASCAR went to this year is the lower downforce package. And watching these race cars go out there during one of the periods of the sandstorm that blew in between turns one and turn two out there kind of really did shake up those cars just a little bit out there. It made it very hard to see those cars. It made it very hard to see those race cars going out there. I know what some of the drivers were even saying as they were driving through that out there, that it made it very hard to see as they were racing out there, and the spotters on top of the tower were also saying some of the same things out there. And NASCAR did say was thinking about bringing them onto pit road, but ultimately decided not to red flag the event. But from your perspective out there, I don't know, you know, from watching it at home versus being at the track, it may have been a little bit different, but the sandstorms that actually did blow in there and lasted, I think, were about 10 or 15 laps out there. From your perspective out there, how much of a difference did you really see in the performance of those cars that it was making?
Well, we were standing in the front stretch, and when we turned around and looked toward the back stretch, because as we looked up at the Jumbotron, we were seeing some fuzziness to the Jumbotron when the cars were in the backstretch, and turned around and looked out toward the backstretch, and we could only see about halfway across the garage area, standing down at ground level. It looked like fog had moved in, like a big fog bank had moved in, but the wind never stopped. So we knew it was a sandstorm, and you could feel it. It wasn't a good feeling on your body, but I could see the way the cars were going into the corners, especially into 3 and 4. They were really, really tiptoeing a bit because I don't think they could see the car in front of them as well. You know, everybody misses the fact that on TV, things look clearer, and even from the cameras on top of the roofs of the cars, things look a lot clearer and brighter than they really are. In fact, you know that when we've gone into some of these races where it was getting dark. It's looked nowhere near as dark. I mean, it's darker on the racetrack than it shows on TV. And it was pretty spooky there for a little bit, and I thought they were going to have to stop for that. You know, before the race, I was talking with Casey Mears, and I've known Casey a long time. He's a great guy and a good driver. And I said to him, you know, be cautious today, be safe. This wind is brutal. What do you think of this wind? And he said, it's the same for everybody, and that's how we have to race. And that's a good point that many, many people miss. He's one of the more sensible drivers in that sense, is that we all have it equal. But, boy, I'll tell you, Mother Nature was not playing favorites on Sunday at all. Everybody was getting buffeted from every direction. As a matter of fact, there was a little bit of sprinkles in the air, it felt like, when that started. And when we had that wreck earlier with Chase Elliott and all of them, we on pit road actually thought it had started raining down in that corner, because all of a sudden a group of cars just took off sliding. And from where we were, didn't look like there was a reason for it until later when we saw the replays and such. But that's how intense the weather was. And we kept getting some sprinkles of sorts all throughout the day, you know, just kind of mixed in the wind. The rain earlier was, in the beginning, was pretty rough. But it wasn't heavy rain. It was just this little constant pelting rain. It was a crazy weather day. But as Casey said, you've got to deal with what you got, because everybody else has got to deal with the same thing. And there were times when I thought it was a little unequal because the way the wind was changing, the guys back in 16th through 18th and 20th were getting hit with no wind when the guys up front were getting hit with it and vice versa. It was just a strange, strange wind.
Yeah, during the day, I know that there were some talks of in the possible of 40-plus mile-an-hour winds, higher gusts, probably in the closer 50-mile-an-hour range. So that really does impact those cars, especially when in 2015 they had a whole lot more downforce, and in 2016 they took a good portion of that away. So, you know, when you do take a look at that at a place like Las Vegas, obviously this year we did have a little bit of higher speeds out there when you went back to practice. Both Brad Keselowski, Team Penske Racing, with his teammate Joey Logano, they were pushing upwards of 196-197 miles an hour. In practice out there, didn't quite hit that benchmark when they got to qualifying, though. But it does show that the incredible speeds out there, that they're pushing that. I did see where I believe it was Landon Castle, if I remember correctly, and don't quote me on this exactly, but he was and I may have to go back and look at this. But I do believe it was Landon Castle that did make a tweet out there talking about one of the engineers that he had quoted, that with those kinds of speeds that they were pushing and with the wind speeds, you know, you're talking upwards of 230-mile-an-hour winds in the back of the field or even mid-pack. That these guys are having to push through. So that's incredible that they're driving in these kinds of conditions out there, and just the sheer force, and we didn't see more incidents than we did.
It's amazing that people just don't comprehend how amazing these guys are, even the ones that people think are nobodies at the back of the field and whatever, the talent it takes to be able to hold on to these things at those speeds and with those kind of conditions, which are part of racing. There's no two ways about that. But, you know, there was a lot of things going on throughout that field. Not only were these guys battling the wind and the weather and not knowing ever when the race might suddenly end, because, boy, I'll tell you what, down over 1 and 2, there was so much cloud cover, it looked like we had a big storm coming in. But the winds evidently held it back enough. But, you know, you look at the way the race ran, and one of the things I give Kyle Busch a lot of credit for was he came down toward the end of that race with very little laps to go and realized if he kept pushing it the way he was in order to keep the lead, chances are he was going to end up in the wall because the car was just tired by that point. I believe his tires were gone. But so he backed up a little bit. He settled for a third, or was it fourth? I think it was third, which the old Kyle Busch never would have done. Saved his car, kept it together, finished the race. More important at that point, because leading the race and blowing a tire and ending up in the wall with a couple to go, there's no glory in that. So I watched a lot of guys toward the very end of that race back up a little bit because the weather was still just ferocious, and it was better to finish than end up wrecked. And as you were saying, though, even though we had long, long stretches of green flag racing under tough conditions, these guys are really good. And this low downforce package, I think, has caused them to drive a little different, and it's putting on a great show, I believe.
Yeah, it really has. It's changed the way a lot of these drivers approach not only the race in the short term, but also their long term racing too. You know, we saw in Atlanta where we went 200 plus laps of green flag conditions out there. You know, these drivers, they got out of that race car at the end of that race, and they were just tired. They were beat down. They were worn out. This is not something that we've seen out of drivers in many, many years. I mean, we're used to seeing drivers getting out of these race cars and, you know, yeah, they're hot and sweaty, but, you know, they're, you know, like Landon Castle or Jimmy Johnson or Casey Kane, they get out of these race cars and they go run a marathon because, you know, they're nice and comfortable sitting in these race cars because these things have been engineered to the point that it's like driving a street car. But, you know, we got to Atlanta and these guys ran long stretches of green flag racing. Even this week at Las Vegas, same deal. You know, these guys are having to race the race car again. You know, they're having to become race car drivers again. They're not getting the nice comfy race car where they sit into it and they can ride around and just go for a joyride. And it's not to say they were going for a joyride earlier, but these cars are much more handful than they were in the past. And I think a lot of these drivers are happy to be back into a car that's like this. And it's, you know, much more about being in a race car and not being about in a car that's been engineered to the point that it's no longer in the driver's hands.
Well, I 100% agree with you, and all the drivers I spoke to were very happy with this package. And I think we're going to see an improvement because over the last few years, one of the things I've discussed with many in NASCAR is the fact that we made the cars and the racetracks too safe. Now, I've been a racer myself for over 50 years. I don't like to see people get injured. I never want to see people get injured. But we've gotten to a point where everything was so safe that people drove over their heads and weren't worried about it because chances are no matter how you hit the wall, you're going to be okay. But then last year we saw a couple of bad injuries between Kyle Busch and in the truck series and such. And this new car is a handful. So they're driving the car with much more respect, more like we did for all the years that made racing great, where the driver and the car had to team up and be a team, not just go out there, sit back and drive and don't worry about where you put it because you don't own it and you don't have to pay to fix it. And what's the difference if I hit a wall? Today, we're back to that old style of driving, which was, like I said, what made auto racing exciting and great. And even though we had long green flag runs this week, they weren't boring. I mean, if you were just watching the front, you might have thought they were a little boring. But throughout the field, there was racing going on. And it's a good thing to see. Even in that wind, they were making some side-by-side moves and trying to use the wind a little bit and the draft and such. It was a good thing to see. And I think they're moving in the right direction.
Yeah, they are. And I think that, you know, as I said, you know, the drivers have asked for this for quite a while. The fans have asked for this. And, you know, this is still just a package that is still in the works. You know, NASCAR is pleased with this. The drivers are pleased with this. You know, we look back at Kentucky last year, we look back at Darlington last year, we look at what the package was able to do at those tracks. But, you know, there is still some testing that has to be done with this package. There is still some unknowns that, sure, we've got fans that are saying that it may not be the greatest package in the world. But that's only because that we still have this testing phase with this package going to these tracks that it hasn't been on yet. And, you know, this is still something that's still in progress. But as you just said, if you're just looking purely at the lead and you think that's it, then, fans are going to be disappointed every time. You know, there's 38, 39 other race cars out there that are passing, that are doing the things that we're getting back to in auto racing and in NASCAR in general. And that's what this package has done to create. And we can't just solely rely on what's happening for the lead every single time to just state that this is the end-all, be-all of what the package is going to do.
No, and the great part is NASCAR and the drivers are all, and the teams are working together to improve it, but keeping in mind that the good part is the drivers want it to be more of a driver's car. So we're not going to have that pressure from the drivers that we might have before, that they didn't like the way the car was, so let's throw it in the garbage. This time around, it's a whole different ballgame. These guys are liking the car. They're willing to work with the car. They're willing to fight with the car. And they're willing to fight for the car. So the other thing I noticed was we had less people. We had more cars finish the race this year in all the races than we've had in the past as far as still running. I'm not talking about guys that got wrecked. That happens. But what I mean is the cars, even the guys with the lower budgets, are managing to finish these races because the car's more drivable and we're not tearing them up.
Yeah, I definitely agree, Reverend Joe. This attempt, I made it back up.
Good,
Reverend Joe. I know your time is limited, but we've got Todd Bigsby and we've got Rowdy Maglite. He started doing a show on the Speedway Digest Radio Network on Monday nights now. Rowdy's covering the ARCA series for us. So we've got a big deal going here. But I know you had
something.
Okay.
I'm going to bow out on you. We'll talk to you next week. We'll be going ahead
before
to leave tomorrow. Yep.
All right. Before you leave, Reverend Joe, give us your pick for Phoenix.
Phoenix, I think we're real close between Kyle Busch, Kurt Busch, and Kevin Harvick. But, boy, Phoenix is one of those great racetracks that, not that they aren't all great, but that's one of those places where it's really can be anybody, but if I had to be pinned down, I'd probably lean toward Harvick's.
Okay, so you're going with the four. I'm going to write you down for the four, Reverend Joe. And again, thank you very much for taking time out while y'all are out there on the West Coast swing and y'all are going to Phoenix. And Reverend Joe, let everybody know where they can follow you at on social media and your website, bud. You got the floor.
On Track with Jesus at AOL.com is my email. And OnTrackWithJesus.org is our website. Give us a holler anytime. We're glad to talk to you. Happy to talk to you. And on our website, if you want to help us out with some financial help, there's a spot there where you can do that. And we all appreciate it. You guys all have a great week. And we'll talk to you next week.
10-4, Reverend Joe. Tell Miss Betty we said hello. And y'all be safe going to Phoenix. We'll talk to you next Tuesday night.
Send her love. All righty. Take care.
You're welcome. All right, that was our Reverend of the show, Mr. Reverend Joe. All right, Stephen, Todd's been waiting a long time. But let's bring Todd in the pit stop here and explain Stephen Wilson. Todd, how you doing tonight, bud?
I'm doing good, bud.
Good. Okay, I know you won your pick last week. You picked the number two to win in Vegas, so congratulations. But do you have anything you would like to ask Stephen or myself? You got the floor.
Now, this could be for either one of you. They're running this new aero package. Now, first part of it is, are they running it all year?
Yes, Stephen. I think at all 9.5 tracks, this new low downforce package is implemented for the whole year of 2016, correct, Stephen?
Yes, this package is implemented for all of 2016. It is a change from 2015. Just a couple of the changes are, and I think I went over this last week in Atlanta, was a reduction in the rear spoiler to 3.5 inches. A front valance was cut from 2.5 inches to 1/4 inch, and the front radiator air dam was cut from 38 inches down to 35 inches. So, yes, it is being run all year long.
Okay. And so far, you know, watching the races with this new aero package, and I know from some of the guys that I've heard, you know, that they really like this aero package. Since they cut the back down, does that help keep the rear of the car more stuck to the track?
No, it doesn't. The more spoiler you have in the rear, the more downforce you get. This is a low downforce package that they've gone with. It's also a reduction in the aero, too, so these cars are less aero-dependent, which is why there's a reduction in the front air valence and the front air radiator air dam. But with the reduction, last year they ran a 6-plus-inch spoiler. This year they're 3.5 inches tall. So they have less downforce in the rear of the car, making them lighter in the rear, making them harder, downforce in the rear of the car. This makes them a little bit harder to drive, which is why you see a little bit of the cars a little bit more around, all over the track, a little bit more than you're used to seeing.
And also, Todd, I can sort of touch on that with Stephen. That's a big deal now where they're what they're calling skewing. They're skewing the car out to the outside a little bit more to try to get that little 3.5-inch spoiler, like Stephen pointed out, trying to get more air on that to make more downforce. And I don't know for sure. Don't quote me on this, but Stephen might help me out with this too, Todd. With the deal with the 78, Martin Truex Jr., with his penalty. I don't know if the roof flap deal might have had something to do with maybe getting more downforce on that rear spoiler. I don't know. Stephen might can answer that better than I can. But Stephen will definitely agree with me on the skewing of the car out, trying to get more air on that smaller 3.5-inch spoiler on the back of the car.
Right. And the deal with the air flap on the top of the car is that it works the same way as the spoiler, is that if they can get the air to go inside of the car, it pushes, it does the same thing as a spoiler. Air goes inside the car, pushes the car down towards the track, making the car heavier, thus making more downforce on the car. NASCAR says that's a no-no. You can't push any air inside of the car by using the air flap. So that's why the 78 has been penalized for what they have at Atlanta. And what they were also penalized for at Daytona for a very similar incident.
Well, yeah, because I know, you know, like asking you and Tim, I know I can get kind of, you know, the correct answer for, you know, what I'm kind of curious about, you know, with all this, you know, with the new stuff. So, you know, I really appreciate you guys, you know, being able to answer that for me.
You're welcome, Todd. And just like Stephen would say, if me or him could not answer it, we would definitely find the answer somewhere, wouldn't we, Stu?
Yeah, I'll try and find the answer for you. Might not know it right that minute, but I'll try and find it.
Well, I really appreciate it.
Todd, before you jump off, you want to, Todd, go ahead and make your pick since you won last week. Now, Reverend Joe picked the four, which the four's already took. So make your pick for Phoenix this weekend.
For Phoenix, I have to go with Kyle Busch.
So you're going with 18. Why are you going with 18? Because the Toyotas are, look like they got a little edge up on the Hendricks this time?
Well, no, because I just from memory from all the racing that's gone on there, Kyle Busch is always the one right up there. And I really think that with them having a handle on stuff, I really think that he's going to pull this win.
You might be right, Todd. I mean, that is a very good pick. And you know how Kyle's been on a roll here in the NASCAR Xfinity Series. Todd, we appreciate you calling in. I'm going to put you back over to meet where you can listen, and we're going to bring on another call. So, Todd, thank you very much, and we'll talk at you next week, bud.
Okay, bud.
All right, see you, Todd. That's our good friend Todd Beasley, upstate New York. His home track is Watkins Glen. Stephen, let's bring on Rowdy. My good friend Rowdy started his show 2 weeks ago, I think, and let's see, let's bring Rowdy to the pit stop. See his funny Stephen looks. Rowdy, how you doing tonight, bud?
Doing great, y'all. Enjoyed the show. Hey,
well,
I tell you what I like about the new packages. We're not having a whole lot of – we're getting a lot of green flag racing, and I like the green flag racing better than the wreck melees that they have. So we actually get a true finish winner at the end.
Yeah, we do too. I mean, you know, just like, you know, Sue and I were fortunate enough to be over at the Atlanta Motor Speedway, and that 211 laps run green flag without a caution, but it puts it back in the driver's hands. I mean, you've got to really drive that race car now, right?
And you don't see that rear end breaking away like you used to see. That breakaway.
Exactly. And Rowdy, how's the? If you want to talk about your show, you got the floor. How's ARCA Racing Weekly with Rowdy going on? I think I listened to some of it last night. You had Prather on, didn't you?
Tommy Prather, yes, sir. We had Tommy Prather, and he was absolutely awesome. And I want to remind everybody that we've got the NASCAR K&N Mobile 150 this weekend. And Mobile really puts on a great show. You can go down there, and it's a cheap stay. They're not going to rob you for $200 a night or require you to stay three nights to get the $200. And it's really... a smile, you know, the smile track, there's not a bad seat in the house. If you've ever been to Mobile International Speedway, it is really a great place to watch a race. And they're going to put on a great show. You know, NBC's coming, film, and they're going to do a rebroadcast of it. I think Tommy said within 2 weeks they'd do the replay on it. So they will have a replay on it. And, you know, that's the first time NASCAR's been back to Mobile since 1951.
God, has it been that long? I know ARCA was going, and then ARCA didn't go this year. But, yeah, it's been that long, right?
Yes, sir. That's what Tommy said. It had been since 1951 since they had been there. And I think he named off the drivers. I know two of them was Tim Flock. And Fireball Roberts were two of the drivers out of the five. I believe he said they were five Hall of Famers that had raced in that race in 51 in Mobile. But Mobile has rolled out the rug. We have been 4 years with ARCA. Really disappointed because ARCA didn't come back, but I understand why they didn't, because of the sponsor. The seats were filled, and Tommy didn't take no for an answer. And he got K&N in there. And they're going to really see a great demand for the K&N to be back. And I applaud Tommy for getting it back. But I appreciate Monday night, Stephen and Tim. You know, we've had some good guests. Actually, I think last night was our sixth night. So, I mean, we've had some really, really good guests. And everybody's been acceptable to it. Of course, we're going to have almost a two-month layover, a little over 2 months from Daytona to Nashville. You know, Nashville comes up April the 9th. So we're looking forward to April the 9th.
Well, that's awesome, Rowdy. And do you have anything you want to ask Stephen? Or Stephen, you have anything you want to ask Rowdy? Y'all got the floor for a minute, and then we'll get Rowdy's pick for this weekend at Phoenix.
I don't have anything for Rowdy tonight.
Me neither, Tim and Steve. I tell you who I'm going to go with. Looks like the Fords, if Penske's got the Fords in line, so I'm going to go with Joey Logano, the number 22 car, to take Phoenix.
Okay. Reverend Joe's got the four, which Todd won last week. Got it. Just to let you know, Todd picked the two, which you picked the 18 last week. You're on with the 22. Okay, so Rowdy, let everybody know where they can follow you at on social media, and about your radio show, ARCA Racing Weekly, on the Speedway Digest Radio Network.
You can find me, just look up on Facebook, rowdymaglite.com or rowdymaglite, and I'll have the directions to get to the show. It's Rowdy Maglite Racing every Monday night at 6 o'clock Central Time, and we've had some great guests. So just give us an hour of your time on Monday night. Thanks, y'all.
That sounds, you're welcome, buddy. That sounds good. Take care, bud. We'll talk at you later, man. Oh, you're welcome. A good friend, Rowdy, there. All right, Stephen, coming up here, I guess we could talk forever. Do you have any breaking news that you need to break? I know you was having technical difficulties earlier when I brought the breaking news about Furniture Row Racing and cold turn and all that. Do you have anything you need to break?
I don't have anything at all.
Okay. Well, let me go ahead and let me go ahead and get our picks, and I'll read off the weekend schedule, TV and radio. Okay, let's see. River Joe got the 4. Rowdy got the 22. Todd got the 18. Let's bring Suzanne in and let her make her pick, which I'm pretty sure is, we probably know exactly who she's going to pick. So, all right, Suzanne, I'm bringing you back out of the producer's chair. Let us know who you're going to pick to win at Phoenix this weekend, NASCAR Sprint Cup Series.
I really, really, really think the 88 is going to do it this week.
Stephen, does she know anything besides $2 and 80?
Well, since nobody else with the 88, we got to give her the 88.
All right, she got the 88. All right, thank you, Suzanne. That's my darling wife and producer there. She answers the calls. I'm going to put her back over there and meet. All right, Stephen, between me and you, I'm going to let you go ahead.
Well,
all right, Reverend Joe's got the 4, Suzanne's got the 88, Rowdy got the 22, so I got the 18, so them are already taken.
You know, Kurt Busch, 2 weeks in a row, he's been sitting on the pole there. He had a good run this past weekend in Las Vegas, and I think it's about time that team just turned the wick up and not just only just sat on the pole for the last 2 weeks. I think this week they're just going to come out there and they're going to pick this thing up, and they're going to enter victory lane this week. So I'm going to go with the number 41, Kurt Busch.
That's a good pick, Stephen. Okay, well, everybody knows you. Reverend Joe's got the 4. Stephen's got the 41. Suzanne's got the 88. Ratty's got the 22. Todd's got the 18. And I'm going to go out on a limb. A lot of people might not like it, but I'm going to go with the number 24, Napa Auto Parts Chevrolet for Rick Kendrick Motorsports, Mr. Chase Elliott. I think he's going to make his first win at 24 cars. Always run good there. And, Stephen, let me read off the scheduled events. Friday on the Sprint Cup qualifying, 6:45 p.m. Now, let me read these times off. It's a little bit interesting here. I got this. This is correct, MRN.com. All times Eastern, local time 2 hours behind. And it's got a dash Friday and Saturday 3 hours behind. So, Sprint Cup qualifying. Friday evening, 6:45 p.m. MRN has your radio. Fox Sports 2 has your TV. And Saturday, here's this weird time deal. I'm just going to read it off. Xfinity Series qualifying, 11:45 a.m. Fox Sports 1 has your TV. And then Saturday afternoon, Xfinity Series, that's all the faster, tougher, brighter, 200 at 2:30 p.m. MRN has your radio. Fox has your TV. And then Sunday, the fourth round of the Sprint Cup Series is at Phoenix International Raceway, the Good Sam 500, 3:30 p.m. MRN has your radio. Fox has your TV. And green flag is scheduled for 3:44 p.m. local. Stephen, let everybody know, they can follow you out on social media, your website, but you got the floor.
You can follow us at Speedway Digest, facebook.com/Speedway Digest, and SpeedwayDigest.com.
That sounds good, bud. You stay warm up there. Now you tell Miss A.M. and the boys we said hello, and let everybody know we'll be back with you next Tuesday night, live from Talladega, Alabama, 6 Central, 7 Eastern. We have at 7:30 Eastern time, bottom of the hour, we have President of Autocross Speedway, Mr. Dave Allen, and then coming up at the top of the hour, driver number 16, Billy's Diabetes Ford for Roush Speedway Racing, and the X-Fantasy Series, Mr. Ryan Reed. Steven, have a good night. Good night from Talladega, Alabama.
FM on the radio.